who should have a trust. If you're a parent, you should care about a trust and what they can do. If you're a business owner, if you're a retiree, or if you're anyone with specific wishes about how your assets should be handled, you should care about a trust.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss.
Before we dive into today's content, which is really going to be, you know, we ping pong between the technical, the financial.
The home and the dough?
And the home, which I would call less technical, more, what's the word for the home content?
Soft skills? Like
soft skills, and it's kind of the heart's core.
Yeah.
Versus
heart and hearth.
Yeah. But before we get into the technical, I just wanted to say that my heart has been dwelling on the episode that published this week as we're recording this. It's November.
Yeah.
You're listening to it and you're going, well, it's not November. It's January.
Yeah.
There's a few episodes we've ever done that I am like, I will listen to this once every several months. One of them is how to be a grandparent.
Yeah. I like you recommending episodes on air. I like inside an episode, you recommend another episode. It's like one of those Matryoshka dolls where you open it up and there's episodes inside episodes.
So, yeah. What we should have done is recommend episodes inside the episode I'm about to recommend.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
It would be a never...
Yeah, blow your mind.
If we could have somehow recommended this episode inside of that episode...
Then it would make a beautiful circle.
People could get stuck forever.
Yeah.
But the episode that came out this week was on how to approach the topic of marrying your daughters to men.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where...
That makes you sound kind of Muslim, kind of scary kind of a way.
Marrying off your daughters? I don't know.
Your grown adult daughters to young
men.
Yes.
How you help shepherd a daughter through the many-year process of preparing for finding...
Okay.
Evaluating a potential mate.
Yeah, I like that.
In any case, we had Pat Lynch on, and I have had just some fantastic conversations.
Do tell.
Of people who listen to that. I've had people fire at me. I think they came in guns a-blazing and said, what's with this crazy person you had on the podcast who said he lives generationally?
Contentious.
So we had a rousing debate that resulted in a dinner date. So that hasn't happened yet, but we said we have to put a pin on this.
Wait. You had a conversation that ended up in a dinner date for your daughter? How old are your daughters? You're already giving them dates?
Yeah. No, the dinner date is to continue the debate with a buddy of mine.
Oh, the dinner date is for you.
Yeah. Okay. And we said, well, we have to finish our workout here at the gym, so we can't continue having this debate, but we'll schedule some time to continue it. Well, I don't know. I'm on the Abraham's Wallet podcast, so maybe a lot of you listeners will roll your eyes at this, but it was, you know, I think it's really wrong to live in a multi-generational household. Part of becoming a man is when your parents kick you out of the house when you're 18 and say, good luck. I hope you can forge your way. And if you don't do that, you end up creating a bunch of lazy guys. And there's a lot of evidence that would suggest that on the surface, what he's saying is correct. But we had a really good conversation, and we'll have more around that piece of what does actual multi-generational family look like. But the main point of the episode on just how to even approach the topic of helping your children prepare for and evaluate a potential mate. So rich. So if you're one of those people who tunes out of our home episodes and just is here for the dough stuff, let me commend to you that one episode, because it was something I'll just be coming back to regularly for the long haul. But that's not what we're here for today. You're going to be glad to hear about I'm looking for the word trickery. No, because it's allowed, but there's the world of trusts, and we get questions a lot about trusts. Should I have a trust? What is a trust?
Yeah. Let me give a little bit of context before you start wade into these waters, because there are going to be laws and stuff involved in today's episode. And, you know, for people who are walking down, not like your workout buddy, but other people who are earnestly walking down the road of going, how do I do a how can I think multi-generationally with my wealth? How can I think my retirement money, for instance, it's not just so that I can have enough money to live on until I die. It's about building something for generations. There's a short that we put out on YouTube where you say something like, we're saying no to things that we could be buying today because we're thinking of our family 150 years from now. And God bless whoever had this short just appear on their crawl without asking for it. And they wrote in a hilarious comment on YouTube, and the comment was, I won't be alive 150 years from now, and my children won't be alive 150 years from now. And I got a lot of entertainment value out of that, because this is somebody who just doesn't understand where we're coming from, which is our thinking is that God has put us into a family, and our family doesn't just exist today. Our family existed 10 generations ago, and it's going to exist 10 generations ahead. It's, you know, obviously it's much longer than that, but we're trying to push out the boundaries of what we're thinking regarding what's the impact of my life. And the best thing for your life isn't that you die on a plush lazy boy with 6 layers of comfort, and it's the most feathery, wonderful kind of comfort in the biggest, watching the biggest screen. That's not the idea, that we can just keep layering on luxuries for ourselves. The idea is that I'm building wealth that's going to be appreciated, enjoyed, and built by subsequent generations. So that's a biblical way of looking at family. That's what we're trying to do. And if I can reference a book that I know I've referenced before, a book called Family Fortunes by Bill Bonner was a kind of eye-opener for me to consider for the first time what a successful multi-gen family looks like. And in that book, Family Fortunes by Bill Bonner, he's talking about long-running successful families like the Rothschilds, and that there's wealth upon wealth upon wealth, generation upon generation. And I'm sure you're going to talk about this, but we see that if you don't train your kids for handling wealth and then just handle them a pile of money, we've talked about this many times, their heads are going to explode. And the money's going to explode, and it could well ruin your kids, and it will certainly ruin the fortune. And in a matter of generations, your family will be starting over. But there is a way to train your family and to handle the money such that wealth builds and builds. Again, that's kind of the theme of that Family Fortunes book. So what I'm kind of presenting to you, and a reason I want you to kind of start talking us around this topic, is because even our folks who, I don't know, they're working their way up even a corporate ladder. They're not even entrepreneurs. They're just making salaries, but they make 5% more a year. And by the end of their life, they're going to have more money than they started with, and probably more money than they need to live. And so there's a question of, well, how do I responsibly hand this down? What are my options? And how can I present a kind of continuing environment, financial environment for the decades to come and generations to come? And what we keep hearing the word trust thrown in here. Like there's a family trust that kind of keeps people at arm's reach from the family fortune, kind of protects it a little bit more. And so it keeps seeming like there's something to know about trust. Maybe it's for my children's generation, not for mine. It seems like there's something to that. Am I right the way that I'm thinking about trusts in general?
Yeah, I mean, that's something we're going to talk about as we dig into the details, is people think trusts, those are for wealthy, multi-generational families that have already gotten there. And yeah. They even, I would say, tend to have a negative connotation in the everyman's parlance, because they
trust fund baby.
Exactly. You don't want to be a trust fund baby, and you don't want to create a trust fund baby. But we're going to dispel some of these myths today.
Oh, nice. I like to dispel a myth.
Yeah. We got a lot to cover, so let's talk about trusts. What is a trust? A trust is just a legal arrangement where one party manages assets for the benefit of others. That one party that manages assets is called the trustee. And the others that the assets are for are the beneficiaries. The trustee can be the beneficiary as well. Or these can be, you know, you could be the trustee and your kids could be the beneficiary. Or the trustee can be some nerd in a suit that your deceased grandfather hired and paid for the next 20 years because he didn't think you were going to be capable of managing money. And frankly, you're not, which is why you still live in the basement of the home you inherited from your deceased grandfather.
Okay, let me ask you a question. The first thing that comes to mind is, why isn't a financial advisor's arrangement with a client based in a trust? Because they're managing other people's money.
It can be. So a financial advisor can serve as a trustee, but typically doesn't. So the financial advisor can also have a power of attorney, meaning they can act legally as the client. But generally, a financial advisor just has discretion in this certain area of their assets and can decide what investments are going to be used. But he or she doesn't have the ability to distribute money or not distribute money when requested by the client. That's something that a trustee actually takes on as a responsibility.
Okay.
And so we'll talk a little bit about that as we go. But why might a trust be useful? Trusts can be useful for families facing estate tax issues. They can help with privacy. They can lead to asset protection in the event of like a liability lawsuit against you. They can help you if you're planning for incapacity. So you go, well, if something happened to me and I wasn't able to manage my own affairs, then how would my money be taken care of? Well, trust can provide you some solutions there. And they can ensure that your wishes are followed in the future. So I like to say a trust is something that can speak for you when you can no longer speak for yourself. That might be because you're in a vegetative state, or it might be because you died a long time ago and your trust still exists.
All right. So are there, I'm assuming there aren't always tax advantages for a trust. There are sometimes tax advantages. Is that right?
Correct. There's a
okay.
That almost everybody listening to this is going to get to the end of the episode and go, huh, I really thought trusts were for different people than what they seem to describe. Most trusts that exist in the United States are not tax shelters. They're not for people who have an estate tax issue. We've talked about the estate tax before, but just to remind everybody, in current times, if you're married, you have over $27 million that you are allowed to pass on to the next generation free of estate tax at the federal level. Which means that if you die with $20 million between you and your wife, you can pass all of that to your kids and not $1 of it will be subject to an estate tax. So
okay.
If your only goal was to protect money from estate taxes, which a lot of people, they think that's what trusts are for, well, then nobody who had less than $27 million would waste any time with a trust. But most trusts are something called revocable living trusts, and we'll get to those. Those are trusts that are established while you're alive, and their main goal is so that when you do die, it's not going to prevent estate taxes from being levied. It's going to smooth out the transition of assets. It's going to help you, again, speak for yourself when you're not there at the table to speak for yourself anymore. Here's the question. Who should have a trust?
Yeah, okay.
If you're not in this list, you can turn off the episode and tune back in when you make it onto this list.
Oh, you could take this same time and go listen to that daughter episode from mid-November.
That's true. You could re-listen to it if you already heard it. If you're a parent, you should care about trusts and what they can do.
Well, there you go.
I think that includes a lot of you.
Right.
If you're a business owner, if you're a retiree, or if you're anyone with specific wishes about how your assets should be handled. So
okay,
if you're like, I don't care, to go back to your person from YouTube, like,
yeah.
Like when I die, I don't care what you do with me. Like, I don't care what my my kids would be dead too. So I don't, their kids, you can throw them into the tar pit. It's not going to bother me. But if you're that guy, I guess you could tune out. But most human beings are going to fit into the group I just mentioned. Here are a few just common misconceptions about trusts. I kind of mentioned one. The biggest one is that trusts are only for the wealthy. So we're going to talk about how a regular old middle-class family can benefit from these. Two is that trusts are super complicated. There are complicated trusts, and I think if we have 5 minutes at the end, I'm going to tell you about some new structures that are really fun to think about, but most of us will have no business touching them. There's really simple trusts that don't change anything about kind of the way you operate day to day. And the third big misconception is that they're expensive. So those trusts that persist over generations, and they have the nerd in the suit who's the paid trustee who tells you when you can get money from your trust, those can be expensive. But a simple living trust is basically just the cost that somebody charges you to set it up. And that's the cost. No ongoing expense there. Okay. So let's talk about types of trust and what they're for, because I kind of hinted at this. The most common and the one that's most relevant to the people listening to this is called a revocable living trust. Revocable means you can set it up and then you can say, nope, I cancel it. And you can take assets. So your home. Right now, if you have a will, Steve, and I assume you do have a will.
I have.
Because I am a part of your life and I don't think I would have let you get this far without a will.
Thank you.
A will and a trust are not substitutes. So if you have a trust, you probably, hopefully, also have a will. But if you have a will, you may not have a trust.
Right.
Now, if you own your home in your own name, so the Manuel family home is owned by Stephen Manuel, and Stephen Manuel sadly passes away tomorrow.
Oh my gosh.
All we have is a will. Now, what happens is that house, it's not like your retirement account where you can just say on your retirement account, when you set it up, you can say the beneficiary is my wife. And as soon as you die, no court involvement, no legal process. You call the company that holds your retirement account and you say, Stephen is dead. This is his wife. Please give me the account. And they will very quickly have a new retirement account set up in your name and transfer the assets to you because you've set that up with a beneficiary. Your home doesn't work that way. You can't put a beneficiary on your house. So if you died, what would happen is if all you had was a will, your estate, so everything you own that's not passed by like beneficiaries, like we just talked about, goes into what's called probate. And the courts get to decide where all my stuff goes. And that takes two things. Time. It can take up to a year for probate processes to complete.
Yuck.
And it takes money, sometimes costing 10% of the value of the estate to get assets through the probate process. And then there's also this problem of there can be in families where maybe there's some lack of harmony. You know, your distant cousin Phil can come in and say, you know, I actually gave him a loan to buy that home, and I am rightfully deserved 30% of that house's value right now. And so then that's the
kind of stunt that Phil would pull. I would expect that out of Phil.
The good thing is Phil is from the Iola, Texas Manuel crowd, and there's some good old boys that would straighten him out real quick.
Oh yeah.
So
now you're talking.
In any case, you don't want any of that stuff to happen. So what a revocable living trust does is it allows you to establish a legal entity, move your home so that it's no longer owned by Stephen Manuel. Now it's owned by the Stephen Manuel Revocable Living Trust. And Stephen Manuel is the trustee of the trust, meaning you get to, while you're alive, make all the decisions. You could move the house out. You could sell it. You could buy a different house. You could buy a car and put it in the trust. You could own stocks and bonds and put those in the trust. You could even own Bitcoin and put it in the trust.
Oh.
But there's no tax benefits to that. It's just as if you own them in your name. The real benefit comes as if you died tomorrow, in the first case, now the house has to transfer to be owned by someone else. In the trust case, the trust still owns the house. And the trust can be turned into an irrevocable trust at that point in time that's going to persist for a long time and have beneficiaries, meaning Stephen's children suddenly are the beneficiaries of that trust and they can use the house or they could sell the house and use the money. Or the trust can distribute those assets, but there's no probate process. There's no court involvement. Your family's assets do not become a matter of public record, so there's some privacy benefits there. And this can be really helpful. The case that I often tell parents that go, well, we don't really have any assets except our house, and I don't think it would be a big deal if that had to go through the courts. I tell them, do you have life insurance? And if they say no, I smack them upside the head and say, what are you doing?
Good for you.
But they say, we have a $2 million life insurance policy on him and $1 million on her. And I go, okay, you have two sweet little kids. If you both died in an accident and those kids were left and you just had a will that said split my money half and half between them, do you want them to receive $1.5 million plus whatever it's grown to by then when they turn 18? Do you think that would help them in life?
I do not. I don't think that's a good move.
Probably not. So instead of that, the trust can own those assets, the benefits of your life insurance policy, and you can have a trustee that says, hey, we've got these trusted friends or professionals or whoever you appoint, and we appoint them to shepherd not only the financial resources that are going to take care of our children for the long term, but also we can say to them, hey, don't give any money out if these negative things are going on in our children's life, or only fund these types of things until they turn 30, at which point we would like you to just hand the rest of the money to them. Or there's all sorts of ways that can shake out, and really you can architect that. So again, that type of trust, the revocable living trust, allows you to speak for yourself at a time when you're not necessarily around to speak for yourself in the future.
Okay, allow me to reword and summarize. A will is something that specifically gives directions for the day I die. Do this and this and this. That's what a will is. A trust, if you imagine a timeline as I am right now, a trust is a protective sheath that goes through time, and you could create slits in it that there's going to be an input here, whatever, and it protects assets over time. And then can spit them out. I guess we'll talk about that in a second, but spit them out based on my dictates.
Correct.
Okay.
Now,
so
the one thing I didn't say is,
yeah,
why would you have both? You would have both because my will says in the will, it's like two lines long. If I die and there's anything I didn't put in my trust, put it in my trust. End of will.
Yeah. If I bought something really important after I wrote this will, it goes in the trust.
Right.
Are there different kinds of irrevocable trusts? I imagine there are.
Stephen, there's so many. So what we were just talking about was a revocable trust.
I hate there's too many options. Okay, go ahead.
The revocable trust, again, that's the one that pretty much everyone I write financial plans for, I go, this is going to take you some time to set up. You're going to have to, like what we just talked about, you're going to have to make some decisions. And I think this is best done sitting with somebody who can kind of walk you through, okay, now we're talking about what happens to financial resources. Let me help you think through that. Now we're talking about your real estate or your business. Are you, you know, Mark, if you die, is it really going to be helpful for your daughter to inherit a financial planning business? Or would it be better for that business to be sold? All that type of stuff. It's best to have somebody kind of walk you through that process.
Yeah.
The good thing about a revocable living trust is you can change it. I have an appointment coming up to go modify my revocable living trust. I do that every, say, 5 to 10 years. Not often, but once in a while, I sit down with an attorney and I say, well, some things have changed and we want to tweak this and that. So you can change it whenever you want. I tell people the time to do that is when you have the funds and time to devote to it. If that's when you're 22, and you're just starting out, great, do it. I think it's reasonable to expect that to cost anywhere from $1,800 to $5,000, depending on where you live. It costs a lot more in New York City to get a lawyer to sit down with you than it does.
Okay, so it involves a lawyer. You need a lawyer.
Now, there are online solutions that we're going to put a link in this episode to one such solution called Trust and Will. And they will actually create you a do-it-yourself trust. And I think that's better than nothing. But I'd have to go back and look at the price. I think if you click the link in the description of the show, you get a 10% discount. It's something like $300 for a married couple to do a will only, or like $750 to do a trust and will. If you're listening to this and you're going, I don't have the money or the time to set up a trust right now, but I've never done the will either, stop everything you're doing and go at least specify a will that says, this is where I want my things to go.
And yes,
almost the most important thing is, if you have children and you haven't ever legally established guardianship provisions for them,
shame on you.
Where does our imaginary listener live, Steve?
Topeka, Kansas.
I don't want the state of Kansas to decide where your kids go if you get hit by a bus with your wife. I want you to decide that. So you fill that form out. You can get powers of attorney in that will only price, and that will let you, if let's say you're incapacitated and your spouse is your power of attorney legally, they can go act on your behalf for financial accounts, as well as there's a medical power of attorney that says she gets to decide when you pull the plug on me if I'm kind of in a medical decisions case where I can't be a part of those decisions.
Okay.
So do that. Stop everything you're doing. At least have the will and the guardianship and the powers of attorney. I recommend sitting down with a lawyer for the trust piece. And you don't have to do that until you are older if financial constraints prevent it. But it's not a bad thing to do it early, because the big thing is something like 89% of revocable living trusts that are created in the United States never get funded. Meaning somebody, like, to go back to my example, Stephen, it's like you set up your trust and you own this nice house, but you never go through the legwork to retitle it in trust and have it actually be owned by the trust. So if you've got a good lawyer, they've still set that will up that says dump the house into my trust if I die. But guess what? When you read a will and a dead person has left a will, well, what is that process called where we read a will and do what it says in the court? It's called the probate process. So we didn't really accomplish the goal of the trust, the primary goal.
It wasn't inside the sheath that I was describing earlier.
Right. So put your cars in your trust, put your house in your trust, put financial accounts. One thing that a lot of people do that I see them skip is they don't put their checking account in their trust.
Interesting.
So their kids, if they pass away, are like, yeah, the house was in the trust, but the checking account wasn't, and the bank won't let me write checks to pay the mortgage on the house for like 6 months until we get through probate.
Right.
So that can be a pain in the patootie. So move those things into trust. The only things that really don't need to be in trust are things like retirement accounts. Those can't actually be put in your trust. They're individual, so they have to be owned by a human person, not a trust.
But you can have a function where the beneficiary changes.
You can make the trust the beneficiary, or in the case of retirement accounts, I typically recommend that you just make people your beneficiary, because it skips a step.
Yeah. So yeah, you can think of your retirement accounts kind of like a driver's license that's connected to me. It doesn't do anybody else any good as a driver's license, because it's part of me. And my retirement accounts are connected to me. If I die, I can give the proceeds of those to somebody else, but I'm not going to, I'm the guy that the retirement accounts are connected to. Okay. So I think this is an obvious point, but I'll ask it as a question. If I buy something in my lifetime that is specifically for the generations, as you know, I have an ambition sometime in the next 10, 15 years to buy a big piece of land in Texas that I could be building on until the day I die, and we could have this big, awesome kind of lodge that all the family could come to and turn wherever. It sounds obvious that because, again, think of the kind of driver's license picture, that would be something I want in that sheath immediately. I don't personally ever want to own it. I want the trust to own that. Is that, am I thinking right?
So putting it in a revocable living trust would be a smart move for the time being. The revocable living trust, typically though, not an entity that's going to survive over generations.
The irrevocable trust, when does it die?
Yeah, the irrevocable trust has to change shape once you die. Because now the trustee, Steve Manuel in this case, is not around to revoke it. So what happens? Well, it can either distribute its assets and you say, well, you know, my trust says if I die before my kids are a certain age, I want you, Mark's trust, to establish trusts for them that have their own special rules. And then eventually everything's gone from my trust. In my case, it shifts over to my wife's trust if she's still around, etc. So it can go away, or you can, if you think of it as a box that we're filling up with assets while you're alive, you can put a lid on that box and it becomes an irrevocable trust, meaning henceforth, it is no longer okay to take things in and out of the trust. What's in the trust stays in the trust from now on, and it has specific rules about how it will be taxed. It's no longer taxed as if it was just my stuff that's in there because I'm not there anymore. Now it is its own taxable entity. It has a separate set of tax rates, different income brackets. Spoiler alert, they are way low. So it's like as a American married couple, you have to make $1 million to be in the top tax bracket. As a trust, I think you have to make $18,000. So it's a different thing. And now it's its kind of own entity where the flexibility is gone, because it's going to just own these assets for some period of time.
And can you put anything new in it at that point?
Once the lid is on, it's harder to take things in and out of the trust. It's not, okay. I won't say it's impossible, but now we're getting into the territory where I'm going to go, you're talking to a financial planner. We can get an estate planning attorney
right
here and go into the details.
But the things that are in the box, or the sheath, as I like to say, the things that are in the box, you could grow wealth in there. True?
Absolutely.
Okay. That sounds like what I want. That sounds like my goal is to have one of those things with the lid on.
Yeah. So there's reasons why you would want to do that now, and there's reasons why you wouldn't. Let's say, so what we're talking about now is an irrevocable trust, and people, not all irrevocable trusts come from revocable trusts where somebody passed away and the lid got put on. Sometimes people actually set up an irrevocable trust as its own entity. We, as financial advisors, have clients that are humans, and we have clients that are irrevocable trusts that we manage money for. And some of those irrevocable trusts were set up by people that we also talk to regularly. So it doesn't necessarily only happen after death.
I think an irrevocable trust would be a great client because they don't ask that many questions. They pay on time. Am I right?
Sometimes this client's usually if you're in irrevocable trust land, you've got some complexity to your situation. Because like a person, that irrevocable trust now has to file a tax return every year. There's rules about how it has to be governed and trustees have to be paid. So it's not something we wouldn't want to go through all that. To, let's say you bought a ranch for $1 million.
Woo!
I don't want to put that ranch into an irrevocable trust unless I'm in a situation where I'm either convinced that that ranch is going to rapidly and dramatically increase in value, or I'm going to die very soon and I want this to be untouchable by my generations, meaning I can't have some yahoo in my lineage that says, I really want a Lamborghini, so let's sell the ranch and buy a car.
That sounds like Phil.
Yeah, Phil. But again, we've built a multi-generational family around Phil to prevent this happening.
Yeah.
So there's general irrevocable trusts. They can provide asset protection. So I kind of referenced this, but let's say you and your wife each have a revocable living trust, and your wife's a brain surgeon, and she sneezes in the middle of a surgery, and now poor patient can't remember anything when they wake up, and you're like, we're gonna get sued for this one.
Oh, could boy.
Put a lid on her trust and say, those are no longer her assets. Now those assets belong to the trust. So if you sue her, sorry, she's broke as a joke. All of she doesn't have anything. There's a trust that can benefit her, but it's not her stuff. So there can be some asset protection. There's situations where you can use these things to qualify for Medicaid. So similarly, you can go, I have no money. The trust has all the money. And I'm just a beneficiary and I can get distributions from the trust, but it's not my money. So on paper, again, I'm broke. There's a lot of rules around that. So we're stepping from pretty easy territory where a lot of people will benefit from that revocable trust. We're stepping into something where you don't just go out and say, hey, make me an irrevocable trust because I heard it's a cool thing to have. This is something you absolutely want to work with a qualified estate attorney
okay.
to establish and understand before you jump into it. But just really quickly, there are lots of types of these. There's a special needs trust. So if you ever have known somebody who's on federal disability, maybe there's a child with special needs that's getting benefits from the government. We know people like that who get a lot of really valuable benefits because they have children with really specific and expensive needs. But most of the time, in order to maintain those benefits, they can't be wealthy. So instead of leaving them a bunch of money when you die, you would say, I'm going to set up a special needs trust that's specifically designed to make sure they don't look wealthy in the eyes of the government and can still have access to resources.
Gotcha.
There's a spendthrift trust, which is specifically, it's an irrevocable trust specifically designed for Phil. It's for somebody who has trouble managing money responsibly and doesn't allow them to blow it, basically. This one makes me gnash my teeth, but there is an entire segment of the trust world called a pet trust.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
To ensure care for your beloved animals after your death. So if you do this would be a time when we would be okay with you unsubscribing from the Abraham's Wallet podcast. If we don't have anything good to share with you, if this is something that you think is worth doing.
I can take care of that pet for the cost of a shotgun shell. It is so cheap.
There's a real estate trust, and I'm going to just briefly mention why that might be used. You can put real estate into a revocable trust. You can put real estate into an irrevocable trust. And then the big mama, the one that gets me the most fired up for our people to aspire
Go on.
Is the dynasty trust.
Oh, I like the sound of that.
The dynasty trust is that thing that we're like, can we come up with an entity that can survive for hundreds of years and grow and grow and grow without getting chomped by the government every time grandpa dies?
Now, come on. Tell us about the dynasty trust.
I'm going to save that one for just a minute because most people listening to this again are not ready for the dynasty trust. I confess, I'm not there. I'm not at all there. But
I forgive you. Just tell us about it.
I think that before we get into the dynasty trust,
dang it.
One other thing I wanted to kind of highlight, because it's a common question we get from kind of our everyday listener, is I am investing in real estate. Should I hold all my investment real estate in a trust? Or I've also heard of this strategy where I hold the real estate in an LLC. And we talked about the benefits of holding real estate in an LLC when we did an episode on business entity selection. So you're starting a business or you're doing an investment. What type of structure should you use for that? But I get this a lot. Hey, I want some protection from liability. If I buy an Airbnb and I get sued because these yahoos throw a party and burn it down with half their friends inside, then what protects me? And the answer is you can do both. So you can have an LLC, a limited liability company, that owns one property, that owns 20 properties. There's pluses and minuses to using lots of LLCs or just one. Keep in mind, these are entities that you're going to have to file a tax return for, and they do require some upkeep. So I personally wouldn't be excited about owning 20 LLCs, but you can own your real estate in an LLC, and then you can own your LLC inside a revocable trust. Of course, you could also own it inside an irrevocable trust, and that would provide you both sets of benefits. So I get the asset or the liability protection of the LLC, where only the assets inside of that entity are at risk if I get sued, because they're not suing me. I don't own the house. The LLC owns the house.
Right.
But then my trust can own my portion of the LLC. So owning real estate in a trust, I definitely am going to recommend that most people, if they own a home, title that in trust.
Okay.
With rental properties and such, you can get into some murky waters, and this is a topic for another day, but sometimes you want to make sure that the financing is locked down before you move a house into an LLC, so that they don't force you to go out and get a commercial loan or even call your residential loan, which some mortgage companies will threaten to do. But it's a question we get a lot, so wanted to cover that. Now, should we get to the mother of all trusts?
We must.
Okay. The Dynasty Trust. Now, this is an irrevocable trust. Again, that means once it's created, generally it can't be changed. And the assets that are in the trust are permanently removed from the creator of the trust's estate.
Okay.
In a nutshell, that $27 million estate tax exemption, you can use it when you die. So if you die with $50 million, the first $27 million is tax-free. The rest gets taxed at 40%. But you can also use it before you die. Meaning, if I've got a $10 million home and I want to put that into an irrevocable trust, I have to gift it into that trust. So if I just gifted it straight into the trust, that would use $10 million of my lifetime exemption. Meaning, I've only got $17 million left.
Okay.
The Dynasty Trust is designed to provide financial benefits to the trust settlers' descendants, and it avoids estate taxes at each generational transfer. They can last indefinitely in certain states. You know, there's something called the rule against perpetuities that was designed to prevent families from doing this, but some states have gotten rid of that. And so in those states, you can have a dynasty trust that lasts for a very long time. Wyoming allows them to last 360 years, which is pretty cool. The tax advantages to this are that contributions can be sheltered from the estate tax. We talked about that. And the assets inside the trust also grow free of estate taxes. So let's say that I'm at the end of life and I've got $25 million of assets. Well, if I put them into a dynasty trust now, I wasn't going to owe estate tax anyways. But my kid, let's say I only have one child and I give it all to them. Well, by the time they die, that $25 million might be worth $60 million if they're a good steward of resources. Now they're going to have to give a ton of it away in estate taxes. So by putting it into the trust now, I've let them, as beneficiaries of that trust, have use of the asset. But they're not worried, man, I got to figure out if this thing grows anymore, I'm going to have to give away 40% of it. This is how real estate assets, people get forced to sell them over time, is that they grow to a certain size and it's like, I can't even afford the taxes on this thing. And I got estate taxed when the asset got passed along. How am I going to come up with 40% of the value of the King Ranch? You know, it's a $1 billion ranch. I can't come up with that. So I have to sell it and chop it up. By the way, I'll just say the estate tax is pure, unadulterated evil. I hate it so much. So anytime you get a chance to oppose the estate tax politically, oppose it.
Yes.
In any case, assets held in the trust are generally shielded from creditors, lawsuits, and divorces of beneficiaries. So this is something it kind of chafed me a little bit, because I was with a family member who was setting up a trust. It was my mother-in-law, and we were kind of looking at the provisions And the lawyer's like, well, you know, if your daughter dumps this guy, then there's going to be a trust set up for her so that he can't get to any of these assets. And I was like, okay, buddy, I'm not dumping her. And then he had the funny crack. Well, maybe she's the one that's going to be dumping you. And I thought, this is hilarious. But there is asset protection there. And then a trustee is going to be the one that manages the trust. That can be a beneficiary. But a lot of times when these dynasty trusts get set up, we're talking with larger amounts of assets. So the trustee is somebody external to the trust. And that's just something really important to consider on any type of trust that's not one that's you're the both the beneficiary and the trustee. Is what kind of relationship am I setting my future generations up for with money based on the trustee I pick? Because the meme is I've got some dweeb that tells my adult child how they can use and access their money. Maybe sometimes that's really, really helpful. And in other cases, I think it can cause problems. So worth really thinking about how that works. So if you want to create a dynasty trust, first build up a massive estate worth millions and millions of dollars.
Okay.
And then you establish the trust in a jurisdiction that permits these long-term trusts.
Wyoming.
That'd be great. And then the initial value of assets you gift into the trust, which can be offset by your lifetime gift exemption. The assets can grow for generations. Beneficiaries can receive distributions. When you set up a trust, there's a trust document that outlines here's how exactly distributions will be handled. You know, they could receive funds for education, medical expenses, general living costs, and the trust can permit discretionary distributions as well. So that's where our dweeb in the suit says, like, I think it's about time that little Timmy had a Ferrari. And so he can choose to do that. And that's basically kind of the reality over the long term is now we are no longer worried about the federal government coming in and taking a 40% bite out of your family's wealth every time somebody dies. So I think these are cool. I think they are one way to kind of move around some of the aforementioned evil estate taxes.
Yes.
And they're astronomically expensive to maintain. So please don't set up a dynasty trust for the $2 million that's going to be left in your 401k when you die.
Right.
Again, that's where I would say you really need to go talk to a professional before you dive too deeply into these waters of irrevocable trusts, because you can create a situation. I was talking to a friend the other day who 3 years ago, he got what was at the time seemed like a really solid recommendation of moving his business into an irrevocable trust. And there's a way to do that with using very minimal amount of that lifetime exemption. But then 3 years later, things had completely shifted and his business was worth 10% of what it had been worth 3 years before.
Ooh.
Praise God, still enough to provide for him and his family and no issues there. But he's thinking, I am so glad I did not spend tens of thousands of dollars initially and on an ongoing basis to do this thing that probably would have had no benefit for me in the long run other than to create a massive bill on my sort of ledger every single year.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like I've just vomited out so much information about trusts. Steve, was any of that helpful to you, the everyman stand-in who's considering is a trust right for me?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the bottom line is that trusts are helpful for most people. Almost every Abrahamic father that's has a vested interest in passing on assets would be interested in a trust. So it sounds like it's kind of like a savings account in that, part of the maturity process for you is that you have a savings account, someplace where you put money not for now. And part of the maturity process for being Abrahamic with your assets is that you got to walk through the process of definitely doing a will. I mean, once you get married or have a job or have something worth preserving, you need a will. And then at some point, when you think, I'm going to have intentions for what I own past my lifetime, you need a trust. So that's the bottom line, is that it applies to everybody. Knowing the difference between revocable and irrevocable is helpful. Knowing that there's different kinds, all that stuff is interesting. And I hear that, you know, to go through it item by item, you need to sit down with a pro to do that. That sounds great. So I think we know enough to be dangerous at this point.
I'm going to leave you with a few practical admonitions.
All right.
Number one, I reiterate, if you're listening to this and you have never set up a will, guardianship provision, legal power of attorney, and healthcare power of attorney, you can just click that link in the description, or you can go to LegalZoom, or you can go to Epic Wills. There's a ton of solutions out there. Abraham's Wallet has zero financial connection to the link we're providing, other than I think it's a good one. Just do that right now, please. Please.
Someday a bot will walk you all through all of that for free.
I'm sure they already have an AI plugged into it. But number two, if you are listening to this and you went, you know what? I set up a trust like 10 years ago. And I don't think when I get my mortgage statement, it says my name on it. Or when I look at the title on my car, it's just me. It's my name. Well, you might be in that crazy number, that 89% of people who set up a trust and then never funded it, never moved assets into it. So it would be something you can pay an attorney to do that for you, or you can just go to the DMV and retitle your car and take your trust. Has you can either bring the whole thing with you, print it out, or you can take, usually on the first few pages, there's something called an affidavit of trust. You can hand that to your bank. You can walk into your bank and say, hey, make my checking account owned by my trust now, make my car owned by my trust. I'm going to retitle my home in trust. Do that, because otherwise you've taken a lot of time and some money to set one of these things up, and it's doing effectively nothing for you. So
yeah,
make sure, A, that you've got kind of your very key bases covered. You're the decider of what happens to your kids if something happens to you. B, if you have made a trust, go out and fund it. And see, if you haven't made a trust, again, I would never say, well, we don't have any emergency fund, but they told us we have to go spend $2,000 on a trust. Don't do that. But put it on your list of the next 5 years. If I'm a married guy and I'm kind of thinking holistically, I need to put this on my medium-term goals to-do list. And it may or may not be the right thing to do it this year, but it's not the right thing to wait until you're 75. And on your deathbed someday going, oh, I'm trying to fund my trust. It's much better if you handle it long before then.
Once again, Mark, you've proven to us why it's helpful to have a certified financial planner like yourself handy to help us here at Abe's Wallet, because there's all of these legal and financial technicalities that very helpful if you want to be a long-term family leader. Again, I think I've heard that this is a pretty necessary thing at some point in the story for every family leader. You just got to go make it happen, put it on your to-do list. So it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like knowing your way around a Roth IRA or something. It might not be, you know, the first thing you've got to do in setting up your home, but somewhere between now and Abrahamic grandfather, you need to put your eyes on a trust at some point. So very helpful today, Mark, and we will be back again with another episode next week, helping you run your home and dough like a biblical boss.